The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have committed abominable deeds. There is no one who does good. The Lord has looked down from heaven upon the sons of men to see if there are any who understand, who seek after God. They have all turned aside. Together they have become corrupt. There is no one who does good, not even one. Do all the workers of wickedness not know, who eat up my people as they eat bread and do not call upon the Lord? There they are in great dread, for God is with the righteous generation. You would put to shame the counsel of the afflicted, but the Lord is in his refuge. Oh, that the salvation of Israel would come out of Zion, when the Lord restores his captive people. Jacob will rejoice. Israel will be glad. The beginning part of Psalm 14 sounds a lot like Romans 3, 10 and following. As it is written, there is none righteous, not even one. There is no one who understands. There is none who seeks for God. All have turned aside. Together they have become useless. There is none who does good. There is not even one. And then the rest of it is a bit different. But that is seemingly a direct reference to Psalm 14. On the back of a car, one day on the campus of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, saw a bumper sticker saying April Fool's Day, national holiday for the ones who have said in their heart, there is no God. The last word on atheism is in Romans 1:21, claiming to be wise, they became fools. Now, are they fools because they claim to be wise and are not? Are they fools, and fools claim to be wise when they are not? Either way, both show indirect and direct contempt for God. Regardless, they sport a spirit of godlessness which reveals itself in two ways. One is in flouting God's law, which we read in Psalm 14, 1 through 3. And two, they are sporting a spirit of godlessness in oppressing his people in 14, 4 through 6. Now, both of those are very reckless, evil Knievel-like. In fact, God looks down from heaven, sees every bit of it. But from earth, the people of God look upward and wait patiently for the redress that is surely on its way. It may be a wait, long or short, only God knows. But it is coming, as surely as there are fools on this earth and as surely as God is in heaven. God is dismissed in 14:1. Saying there is no God is not so much a misguided conviction as it is an irresponsible gesture of defiance. Romans 1:19 and then verse 28 show how their defiance is perversity. And I quote, since what can be known about God is plain to them. And, end of quote, and they did not see fit to acknowledge God, which is another quote from 28. You ever see that movie Baby Geniuses? The premise was that the babies were geniuses until a certain age, and then at that age they became like the rest of us. Not so genius, in other words. This is similar to what happens in the case of people who deny God. At some point, they have the knowledge. God makes sure that all of us have that knowledge. We're geniuses, in other words, in that respect. Then, at some point, they get stupid, and they deny it long enough to where God gives them over to a depraved mind. The word fool used in this text of Psalm 14 is Nabal. Nabal is epitomized in 1 Samuel 25:25. But the word doesn't signify a mental deficiency. It signifies a moral deficiency. In Psalm 10:4, it is expounded as a gamble versus moral sanctions. In Job 21:7-15, it is characterized as impatience against authority. In Romans 1:18 and following, as an intellectual and moral suicide. All the above elements are present in Psalm 14, as these folks are corrupt regarding their self as well as abominably offensive to God and fellow man. Then we have, after God is dismissed, we have man assessed in 14, 2 and 3. I think that you have here the ugly materialist or naturalist of 14:1 as being an example that can be found in all mankind. Now, not everyone is as aggressive as the fool that is the type of Nabal in 1 Samuel 25, but no one is found to act wisely in all the earth. We can find good things that might be classified as wise using our own standards, but when God assesses and looks at them, well, you can read how he assesses them in 14:1-3. Note the progression from 14:1's corrupt persons, and it goes toward vile deeds. Now, vile is putrid, or like New English Bible's, rotten to the core. No, not even one does good. That is where God is concerned. This can be said since all we do is an effrontery, that is an impudent and an arrogant boldness of supposedly knowing better than God. Folks who do these sorts of things love evil rather than good at times, not always, but at times. In this assessment are certain elements that are reminiscent of the pre-flood situation in life. There God surveys the whole human race and finds it corrupt. And he does something about it. In Romans 3:10-12 makes clear that this condition that we're talking about is a perennial condition, and it is also universal. So then we move on to the great miscalculation by these folks who are called fools. The failure of evil to discriminate is folly, according to 14:4. There is this problem in a fool that they cannot discriminate, and they lump everything into these huge categories and therefore find the premise or their proof, I use quotes around the word proof, to decide whatever it is that they're going to decide. The failure to foresee is also folly, 14:5. There's no great dread in them. They just don't even understand what they're looking at in the very near future. They never get it. They act like animals without any concerns for things larger than themselves or the immediate. The unconcerned exploiters and atheists of 14:4 are complacent as well as complicit. Now, this may well be the 20th and 21st century man, now that I think about it. The coming terror is not something they choose to deal with right now, but they will. C.S. Lewis wrote, and I quote, "In the end, that face which is the delight or the terror of the universe might be turned upon each of us, either conferring glory inexpressible or inflicting shame that can never be cured or disguised. That brings us to then the great day which is to come. God restores the fortunes of his people. Yeah, maybe they were lost for a little while. Maybe they weren't there in completeness for a little while. For a time, God allows persecution and evildoers to frustrate the plans of the company of the righteous and the poor. But they, unlike the atheist who devours God's people, have hope that God is watching and will restore all that they have ever been called upon to give up, by force or otherwise. And even now, in the midst of all of that, remains their refuge. Romans 8:19-25 tells us how to live in such a time as this. That is, we are to pray such a prayer as in our hearts. We await the salvation of Israel out of Zion. Psalm 126 contains a foretaste of that joy on that day. Listen to it. When the Lord brought back the captive ones of Zion, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter, and our tongue with joyful shouting. Then they said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us. We are glad. Restore our captivity, O Lord, as the streams in the south. Those who sow in tears shall reap with joyful shouting. He who goes to and fro weeping, carrying his bag of seed, shall indeed come again with a shout of joy, bringing his sheaves with him. Anticipation of deliverance is like looking toward a time when God's presence will be an active force and actual deliverance accomplished from actual trouble. But in this psalm, we end with prayer, that is Psalm 14, for real deliverance, full deliverance, the deliverance promised in the Bible when the fools are no longer in charge and powerful, when they are no longer able to devour God's people and remove the fortunes of the righteous. Prayer is extolled as the critical response in the nasty now. It's a real shame that the only one the atheist has to talk to is himself. He thinks he's being listened to by others, but those are fools as well. In their dread, all of them are reduced to talking to their little g God, which is themselves. And they know that God is not with them, but is with the righteous. Instinctively, they know this. In their conscience, they know this. God has made it so. Don't think that they don't have problems and that those problems are our way in to speak to them and their conscience and their intuition. What is clear for all people. In the Hebrew, it says they feared a fear. The idea is that they were in great terror for consternation. I'm sorry, they were in great terror or consternation. They were not calm in their belief that there was no God. See, their conscience works against them. They endeavored to try to rid themselves of the knowledge of God. They wished to satisfy themselves that there was no God, that they had nothing to dread, and they could just go on as they are in the present with impunity. But they can't do this. They can't make that so. In spite of all their efforts, there was such a proof of God's existence and of God being the friend of the righteous, and consequently the enemy of those such as themselves. And it fills their minds with alarm, even now. People cannot, by an effort of their will, get rid of the evidence that there is a God. In the face of all their attempts to convince themselves of this, the demonstration of his existence will press upon them and will often fill their minds with terror. Do not think otherwise. A fool can never be sure, in other words, that there is no God. Don't be a fool. That's all for now. So until we see each other again, Lord willing, whether that be on Sunday or another time, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace.